Hello, it's episode 44 of Two Girls Talking. I'm Katie Kylie from 97.1 The River in Atlanta. I do the afternoon drive show, and I'm with my buddy Melissa Ruggieri. She's the music critic for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution and does the music scene blog there, too, on AJC.com. We are Two Girls Talking, and this week about farewell tours or fake farewell tours.
Mythical. I'm calling them mythical farewell tours.
That's a little nicer. And this is just coming off Elton John's weekend in Atlanta, and we did our podcast about that last week. Melissa.
I know. What'd you think?
It was worth every penny. And I, when I'm buying my concert tickets and buying them for face value like that, and I thought they were just ridiculous, it was extraordinary. It was so good. It was, there was not a single complaint about it.
And you can't often say it was worth every penny.
Oh my gosh. He played for 3 hours, almost 3 hours. He was on stage almost the whole time. Mm-hmm. The band just jammed. There were a couple of moments there that were just so epic. And I remember thinking at some point, how do they do this night after night?
It's really, and you know, when you think about that, I think that's when you start to understand why it is the end or coming to the end or will be possibly not the end. Who knows? But you know, I mean, when an artist starts thinking about winding down their career, because, you know, Elton John's 72. How much playing is he doing? 2.5 hours a night. You know, he does probably 2 or 3 shows in a row, takes a day off, whatever. Also, every time you are playing the piano version, you know, the piano parts of Rocket Man and Leave On or whatever, you have to do those every night as if you are playing them for the first time
exactly.
And having a great time doing it, because the people who were there aren't the same people who were there the night before, and they want the same experience.
It was
it's exhausting.
Unbelievable. Yeah, and it's so much him. That's the thing.
That right.
When you see a band in its entirety and you're realizing there are lots of people carrying this, and his backup band is so phenomenal.
Because they've been together
been
so long, too.
For years,
like Billy Joel's band,
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously he can't do it all without them.
Right.
But the point that he's playing the entire time, he's on stage almost the entire time, he's singing most of the time, it just blew me away. And the song list, oh my gosh. I mean, there were maybe 2 or 3 songs I wish I had heard, but right. I was not disappointed not to hear them.
I wished he had done Mona Lisa as in Mad Hatters.
A lot of people were saying that, yeah.
Last year as well, because that was the one that I went, you know, I don't need to hear Crocodile Rock ever again, but I know that there are people there who do.
And it was so great.
Yeah.
It was so great. It was just magical.
Well, someone was just telling me who went to the other show was during, you know, how he kind of leaves the stage briefly before Funeral for a Friend and Love Lies Bleeding. But
just to change clothes.
Just to change clothes.
Yeah.
However,
I'm sitting here thinking, that's got to take a little while to change your clothes at our age.
And not to mention the amount of things that he's putting on, the kimonos and the glasses and everything else. It would take me 20 minutes. But this person was saying that when the song started, a big chunk of the audience started to get up to, like, go to the bathroom, go get a drink or whatever.
He
was thinking to himself, do you not know Elton's catalog that deeply? It's not even that deeply. I mean, they weren't hits, but they certainly are part of classic Elton John lore. To me, that was the highlight of that
Same
show.
Here.
I mean, the musicianship in Funeral for a Friend and then Love Lies Bleeding. I mean, and the buildup
so
between them, the drama.
Did it remind you of Phantom?
A little bit. Well,
because,
the dry ice.
Well, the way the piano was moving through the fog was like the boat.
That's right.
And then all those candles burn. It was just awesome.
It was so dramatic.
The way the
piano moved. Dramatic. It was so
you're right,
but it was
that's
great.
Been my favorite since I was a kid. And I can remember seeing him on the floor when I was on the floor to see the concert, like back in 1976, I think. And that being a highlight. Yeah. So I'm shocked that anybody would leave. From where I was sitting, my seats were pretty good. People weren't getting up and down that often.
That's good.
It was really great. There wasn't really a place where you could go, oh, I need to go to the restroom.
There really
unless
isn't.
Unless there just is a song you don't like.
Well,
that
that's
much.
It. And that set list, I think he does a magnificent job of putting in some deeper cuts for the people who have been with him for, you know, 40-something years, but also not, you know, not ignoring the hits that, like, I don't necessarily want to hear, but I know that other people do.
Yes.
And that's a tricky thing to do when you have a catalog of, you know, probably 150 songs that you could be playing. And yeah, I know he doesn't do any of the Lion King stuff, which...
Well, that was fine with me.
It was fine with me, too, but I'm sure that there are...
Because he didn't write that. With
casual fans that, you know, necessarily, you know, really want to hear it. Might be disappointed that they didn't hear Circle of Life or whatever. But then try inserting Circle of Life or Can You Feel the Love Tonight into that set list. That would be hard, too, to find that right balance. And... The thing that, you know, I noticed when my colleague Rodney Ho covered the show for me because I was out of town, but he was texting me during the show, and it felt like it was the exact same show that I had seen last year, which is totally fine because new people like you, you know, didn't see it last year. But the fact that they're still playing the same songs in pretty much the same order, that has to be tiring.
And that was a year ago.
That was a year ago. And he still has another, we talked about last week, he's not wrapping up until the end of 2020. So he has a year and a month to go.
And I think he added a song too.
He added, there's, sorry, seems to be the hardest word.
Even, yes. There was a song added.
Yes, that was not in my show last year. But.
What did you think of, I thought the video was really interesting because sometimes I would have rather seen him. Some of the videos were strange. Do you know where they came from? Like some you could tell were old and some.
Yeah, I don't.
And some were really great and really added to it. And some of them I was like, yeah, that's a little weird.
But. I like the stage setup. Well, you know, I think he may have pulled some stuff from his Vegas show.
Okay.
That was also, I think David LaChapelle, the photographer, designed that whole show and a lot of the video and stuff. So they may have utilized some of that. I can't remember, honestly, since last year what it was. But I just remember being intrigued by the styling of the stage. It was almost sort of like a kidney-shaped stage.
Yeah.
And just a different type of thing. The backdrop was really cool that you don't see at every show. And then, of course, the way he departs the stage, we won't ruin it for people who haven't seen it.
That was sweet. That was a surprise.
But it is a moment where you do get a little teary-eyed and, you know, kind of think, well, this is the end of Elton, you know, for now. For now. And see, and that's the thing. I mean, I do believe that the end of 2020 will be the end for Elton as a regular touring artist.
What did he say during your tour about playing Atlanta?
Oh, he said, this is the last time I'm going to be here, and I love being here, and Atlanta means so much to me, and talked about, you know, his life here, and he still has a place here, and how he started his AIDS Foundation here. And
but did he say, this is probably the last time you'll see me? Oh, okay.
Yes, he did.
He said that, too.
Yes, he did. He said that a year ago in November as well.
Okay, yeah. All right. Yeah. It wasn't true.
But being that they've set the last date for London, those three shows that he's going to do at the O2 Arena, I feel like, of course, that's going to be a fitting end because you want to go back to your roots. Just like Kiss just announced their final, so they say, show.
And I saw their final show 25 years ago.
Well, we'll talk about that in a second. But that show is going to be July 17, 2021 in New York. And Paul is from New York. Gene grew up in New York. That's where Kiss was born. So I think once you've set that final date, then you're probably going to be done because then you really will be a jerk if you come back and take people's money again or position it as this is the last time you're going to get to see me. But then a year later, you come back again. I will say Kiss is irritating me because I did believe them that this was the last time.
I didn't.
Well, I thought this was the last time they'd play Atlanta. To be fair, most of the other cities they are playing next year, they haven't played yet. So it's not as if they are doing a lot of repeat markets. Atlanta does have another show in September of 2020. They haven't announced the venue yet and the information for any of the shows yet other than the cities that they're going
and
to play.
And this just came out. What are some of the other cities?
Some of the other cities that they're doing when they come back. So here's what they're doing. They just finished up doing stuff in Europe. They go back on the road in February in the U.S., but they're doing small cities like Peoria and Charlottesville and Allentown. Then they go to South America and Europe for the summer. Then they come back to the East Coast in the fall. And we're really the only big city on that leg because they're doing like Atlantic City, Dayton, Raleigh. Actually, it's not just the East Coast. Boise, Austin, cities that they haven't played yet. I think what may have happened was they really should have done two shows here this past April when they played. And maybe because of scheduling or whatever, they weren't able to because Atlanta is a market that could have handled two dates. And maybe that's why.
We're such a hub, too, for so many cities nearby.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. I mean, that could be part of it, too. So then they're going to do the Kiss Cruise late fall of next year. They're not doing anything like end of next year. And then they're going to do the final show although I can't imagine they're not going to do anything from January to July of 2021 when Gene Simmons could be making money. I mean,
right.
You know, he's going to try and find a way to make money anyway.
Right.
But, you know, the farewell tour that they did in 2000, that they called the farewell tour. I agree with you. I know it was called the farewell tour.
I'm talking about one before then.
Well,
I'm telling
that's
you.
True.
There was one before then. I just kind of can't get over. Yeah, it's
I know. But the one in 2000, that was the last tour that the original reunited foursome with Ace Frehley and Peter Criss were part of. So in a way, semantics, you know, that was a farewell to the original Kiss. And Paul Stanley has said that he felt like it was a way to finally bury that version of Kiss, if you will, because, you know, they had so many issues with Ace and Peter and, you know, them in the band, out of the band, drugs, legal stuff, whatever, that I guess they were like, all right, we'll dig the hole. We'll throw some dirt on it. Call it a day. And then, you know, a few years later go, oh, wait, but there's still a demand. So why not? You know, but again, this is another band that even though I wouldn't say their catalog is as much of a heavy lift as Elton John's musically is, it's still the makeup, the boots, the whole rigmarole you have to go through before going on stage, the pyro you have to deal with behind you, even though you know it's going to blow up during this song. You take one step a little to the left or the right, you know, that could be a problem.
Yes.
And to do that, you know, they just added 75 dates to this tour.
Wow. That's amazing.
It's been going on forever, too. it's kind of unbelievable, really, how long. And again, these guys aren't young. Paul is 67. Gene is 70. Elton John is 72. And then we have my girl Cher.
I saw her farewell tour.
Well,
I was on the floor at. It probably was the Omni back then, to be honest with you.
Well, it was in 2002.
Okay.
It was her Living Proof album, and it was Living Proof the Farewell. At the time, she had the big comeback with Believe in 99. So then, sure, you go on a long tour, and then you come back and say, all right, this is going to be it, you know, whatever. Then Vegas called. And she set up camp at Caesars Coliseum. She was there from 2008 to 2011. She was doing dates in between Elton and Celine and whoever else happened to be playing there. Not like a straight run. She did like 7-8 shows a month for, you know, 3 years. That show made almost $100 million in 3 years. So you look at that kind of money and you go, okay, well, you know, maybe there's something here. Then in 2013, she released another album, Closer to the Truth, which was a really good album. She had a big club hit with it called Woman's World, which is a great song. She also had a big ballad from it called I Hope You Find It, another great song. Then she went back on the road in 2014, and she pretty much hasn't left.
I think they all feel like they may not have anything left in them by a certain time, but they do. I mean, it's amazing.
Cher's 73. I mean, she looks phenomenal.
Yeah, she does.
And she always said her big opening statement, you know, when she chats with the audience for 10, 15 minutes. She's a talker at the beginning of the show, and then you'll hear from her the rest of the show. But she always says at the end, you know, she turns around and goes, you know, and what's your grandmother doing tonight? You know, which is such a great line, because when you stop and think about it, for most people, yes, she is the same age as a grandparent would be, and look at her and look what she's doing. But she's also still back in Vegas. She has another residency called Classic Cher that started in 2017. It's at Park MGM. Fun show. If you're going out to Vegas, go see it. That's, to me, those don't count like a tour, because I think if an artist says they're saying goodbye to touring, it means they don't want to be on the road all the time. You want to go set up camp in Vegas for, you know, a year and a half or whatever.
See, but they need that, but something
call it
needs
something
to,
else.
Because I think most people, you and I, are a little more savvy with certain things about touring because it's our business. But like Kiss and like Elton John, like last year I said to you, I was like, I don't believe this is the last he's going to be coming to Atlanta, so I'm going to wait.
Right.
And then this time I thought, ooh, you know what? He may not do this again, so I am going to get them now. But the thing is, the tickets are so pricey.
Yes.
And you love this artist so much, you don't want to miss an opportunity. Now, if I know that Elton John's going to be playing in Las Vegas, doing a residency a couple years down the road, well, then maybe I'll save my money and fly to Vegas and go. But to have everybody racing and crying about not getting tickets and all that, it's a little crazy.
It is. And, of course, you know, he's not going to announce now if he's going to do a Vegas show in 2 years. He doesn't know. But also that would prompt you to do exactly what you just said. Go, I'll wait till he goes to Vegas. I go out to Vegas every couple of years anyway.
Yeah.
So I'll just catch him when I'm out there rather than I will spend X amount of dollars on this ticket now. You know, something else they did with this tour, which a lot of tours have been doing. You may have even noticed this if you've gone to the Ticketmaster or whatever ticketing site where it might say prices may fluctuate. They've been doing demand pricing, just like they do with airline tickets or sporting event tickets, because the Elton tickets, I looked at the ticket prices of the seats that were left the Wednesday before the Friday show, because I do a live music picks thing every week and I have to include ticket prices. And the lowest price ticket on the floor on Wednesday was about $600. It was between $600 and $700. I mean, the back of the floor. The front row, it was $2,000.
Yeah.
They were $2,000. And I think the highest ticket, like in the upper levels that was available, I think it was $150. So it was basically you couldn't get in the door for less than $150. At that point, you want to sit down front. If you have a lot of money, you're going to spend $2,000 to sit up front. Otherwise, it's going to cost you $600, $700 to sit on the floor. When my colleague Rodney went to the show to review it, his review ticket was a floor seat. And his printed ticket said $250. That's how much
they originally were.
They originally were.
Yeah.
So they either dropped them from the $600-$700 that I saw, or they started out at $250 and then raised them.
That's what I think happened.
But because this was a media ticket,
yeah.
I mean, those get put into a separate, you know, batch that they take from or whatever. So it may have had the original pricing on it.
Yeah.
I also received an email from a woman who was questioning my ticket range because she said the other list that we run in the paper, which doesn't, the person who does it, it's a huge list. I mean, she doesn't have time to check the ticket prices of every show every week. So she had the ticket prices listed as to what they were when they were announced. And this woman's email was like, how come your list here says this, but your thing says that? And I said, well, mine were checked on Wednesday because I'm able to check that right, you know, as close as possible to the show, whereas hers were probably from 7 months ago when the show was first announced. And it's just interesting how, you know, it's just an algorithm, just like they use a Delta or whatever, that this is how many people are looking at. I mean, they know if you're just looking at the tickets, if you're not buying the tickets, if they want. Yeah. And that's how you might wind up, you know, paying whatever you're going to pay. It works both ways. You know, if you had waited, maybe you would have gotten your seats for less. Maybe they would have gone up higher. And that's the gamble that you have to take.
Right.
And,
right.
You know, it kind of sucks that you have to think that way about anything that you go to now, that, you know, even when you see an airline ticket, it's like, I don't know. Like when it says one ticket left at this price. Really? The whole plane's empty. When you look at the seating chart, the whole plane's empty.
Right.
Is it really going to be this price or, you know?
Yeah. And I always wondered until I, you know, in radio, we got our tickets for free for so many years.
Right.
The nice thing for you to know listening is that we have to give away what we say we're going to give away. Like the promoter mm-hmm. gives us tickets and it goes to winners. And if winners don't pick them up by the time the office closes at the concert, then it will go out to people. But if it's a show I don't want to miss, I'm going to buy my tickets now.
Right. You're and there have been
a lot more than I thought that I was going to buy for.
Elton, you mean?
Yeah. Well, for instance, Elton and Prince and all the ones that I'm thinking of that I just went, I'm not going to miss out on this. I want to have good seats. I don't want to be in the front row, but I want to be where I can. That was the other thing about the Elton John show. The sound was phenomenal. It was louder than ELO because that was the best concert I'd ever heard.
That was the best sounding concert I've ever heard. Yeah.
It was incredible.
Yeah.
But Elton's sound was fantastic. And I'm not sure if it was where I was sitting or it was quite loud. I had forgotten to bring earplugs, but it was really, really good sounding.
Were you were like the first or second side section from the stage?
Second side section from the stage.
Those are typically where the review tickets are. I'm actually glad I didn't review this one because I hate floor seats. I would have been really annoyed.
Oh my gosh, I'm telling you.
If I had seen that my review tickets are on the floor. They were 13th row, so it certainly wasn't bad by any means. But if you put me anywhere past the 20th row, I can't see.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm only 5'4".
They're standing up the whole time. And they were. It was such a great crowd. You could just tell everybody. The whole time, most people were standing up.
It's like going to a Billy Joel show, especially in the Garden.
Yeah, that's what it felt like. Yeah. It felt like seeing something like that. Like it was a huge celebration, like somebody was home. It was just a really, really special experience.
I do wish, from what I heard from you and from Rodney, that he had changed up his banter a little bit just about, you know, what he talked about Atlanta, because as we talked about on our podcast last week, I mean, he had such a long period that he lived here and had so many important things in his life happen when he lived here and, you know, named an album after living
That's
here.
That's right, Peachtree Road.
That you would almost expect him to have a little story about something that he might want to share. I mean, which, you know, he did talk about starting his AIDS foundation here and, you know, the other things that he's done here. But it seemed, you know, I mean, at least in my show anyway, it was just sort of matter of fact, like, you know, Atlanta's meant so much to me because of XYZ. I just felt like there could have been, like, you know, talk about one of, you know, your favorite restaurants. Oh, I'm so happy to be back because I like to go to blah, you know.
But we know that. We know that from the newspaper back then, from the AJC.
I guess,
like that he used to go to the Buckhead Diner. And, you know, that is, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
But I think the bigger thing that would have been a bust would have been if he had forgotten to say something that was so
horrible.
Important. So I think it almost has to be rote, right?
Right.
That he has to really know exactly
what he's saying. That he is saying pretty much, you know, insert city here, you know, although I'm sure, you know, Atlanta does mean a little bit more to him.
Yes. And you got that. And I felt like it was totally genuine.
Yeah.
That was the other thing. It's not easy to fake it if you're not feeling great. And I could tell at one point he coughed and I was like, oh, he must have been sick.
Mm-hmm.
Like we thought it was because his mother-in-law had passed away that
he was extremely unwell.
But I think aside from that, he also had something going on and he kept going over to this thing. And I'm not sure if he was spitting or inhaling.
it could have been like an inhaler. Yeah.
But something was going, but you didn't hear it in his voice at all. There was just like one cough that made me go.
Well, and that's the other thing of, you know, these people on their farewell tours. You know, Bob Seger just ended his in Philly a couple days ago. And I believe it's the end for him because I think if either you're an older person who has young kids like Elton, or you are someone who had some sort of physical ailment like Bob Seger did with that neck spine thing that he had to deal with, I really think when you say I'm done, that you're done because you have really good reasons for not wanting to be out there. I mean, I'm sure physically that took a toll on Seger to, even though, you know, we saw him and it's not like he's running around the stage, but he's still pretty mobile and he's still getting into the music and really seemed to love being up there. So, you know, you're still moving a lot of your joints and muscles and everything. And if you have a problem there, you're going to feel it the next day. So I do believe in certain circumstances, you're going to be done. Kiss is hard to believe just because Jean likes to make money all the time. Cher, to her credit, is no longer calling anything a farewell.
Well, and the thing is, she can keep doing it as long as she wants to. It's not like you have band members that are right. the same or have to be the same. Or
exactly. Yeah. When you're a solo performer.
Yeah,
and
you can
and
do...
she just announced a whole slew of new dates for the spring of next year. She's doing another like 20, 30 shows. Atlanta is not part of that. She played Duluth in January of this year. But who knows? I mean, you know, if she may extend it after she does some more Vegas shows, maybe she'll do fall dates and then maybe she'll come back and play Atlanta since she did Duluth last time. Whatever. I mean, but at least, you know, she's kind of gotten to the point where she's like, yeah, I don't know when it's going to end. It's going to end when I fall off the stage one day or I can't walk and that'll be that. But at least it's not like toying with people's emotions and saying, yeah, it's the last time. It's the last time you're going to come see me. Because I think it's kind of silly. And we've talked to some people, maybe like Def Leppard, like, you know, Joe Elliott or Rick Allen and some other bands who have gotten to the point where they don't want to classify anything as a farewell. Even Steve Lukather with Toto. You know, I read some other interviews he had done later that week or the next week with some other papers, and he said a little more definitively with them that, you know, this is it. We're not, this version of Toto will never perform again. Whereas like us, he kind of said, well, we're going to go on a long hiatus and who knows when we'll be back kind of thing. And I just kind of feel like they don't want to necessarily say we're done, because if 3 years from now they come back, then people like us point fingers and go, wait.
Motley Crue signed something. And now I'm hearing all these ramblings about Motley Crue or rumblings.
I don't think they will. I don't know.
There's something going on, though.
They just said they weren't going to tour.
Right.
So,
and then they said now it's like there may be new music. I don't know. I bet you.
But if they do new music, then they're not going against what they said they were going to do.
Correct.
If they signed
it, I bet you they'll be back out on the road.
Well, and you know, and then there's also the semantics of, you know, saying we're not going to tour.
Yes.
Well,
does that mean a large tour?
Right. Exactly. I mean, and I think Elton even may have said this, because I was fortunate enough to be at his announcement of these tours back in New York a couple of years ago. It was the same week as the Grammys. And they invited me, which was just an astounding thing to be part of, and to have Elton 2 feet in front of me playing the piano. But he really did say, you know, I'm not going to play anymore, but I can't do this type of touring because I want to be home with my family. So, yeah, you're not going to see them doing, you know, Kiss doing 2 year tours, or even Cher, you know, necessarily doing 2 year tours. But it doesn't mean that they might not do 8 dates a year, one like Billy. You know, I mean, Billy doing his residency at the Garden. That's a perfect example, even though he still tours or whatever. But just set up camp somewhere and have the people come to you.
What he's done is very, very smart. One of the Elton John things that I thought was hilarious was he was talking about how much he loves applause and how much he loves that instant gratification. Mm-hmm. And so he was saying, you know, there's nothing like it. And I've had just millions and millions of people give me all this love and applause. And he goes, and I don't need it anymore. And then like 3 minutes later, he's literally standing up, putting his hands like, I need to hear more. And I was like, dude, you are an addict to applause.
He is.
And it's lovely. I mean, that was really fun because you were, of course, everybody's going to lose their minds and scream. But.
Well, and, you know, I guess maybe he meant, he doesn't need, you know, if you're in front of me and you're going to clap for me, great, but I don't need to seek it out.
No, literally, it was literally like a hypocritical thing if you were looking at it in a bad way. It was hilarious.
Yeah.
It was very funny and cute.
But he is a fame addict. I mean, he talks about that in his book, which I'm still, you know, reading.
Same here.
In the back part now, you know, and he does talk a lot about being addicted to fame and being addicted to having someone love him. Basically. And, you know, and that, of course, stems from his childhood. And you could see why that having that type of applause and that type of love thrown at you, which are things we'll never experience. You know, I mean, we don't know what it's like to have 20,000 people screaming your name.
You know what it feels like to have somebody that loves you, what you write and will compliment you. It's one of the most amazing things ever that we get this almost every day. And to imagine standing in front of that crowd that night,
having, you know, someone having 20,000 people reading back in unison something I wrote, you know what I mean?
That's
like
it.
Like
singing
with a song.
Oh my,
I mean,
gosh.
When you look at that crowd, you know, during a Piano Man moment, or, you know, during
song.
Your song, or Rocket Man, or whatever. I mean, it's just unbelievable. When you know, I do sometimes stop and look at the crowd rather than watch the artist.
Same here, because you just...
I just want to, like, kind of feel, like, what that feels like. I mean, you know, it's not for you, obviously. I'm just saying. But you know what I mean? Like, just to see, like, just to hear it. Hear that sound coming at you of something that you created is got to be just... That's probably what keeps you going. I mean, that's probably what keeps you on stage.
It's got to be.
Even when you get into, you know, your 70s and might not want to have to get on the plane or the tour bus. And, you know, no matter, you know, and Elton travels first class. I'm sure the guys in Kiss, you know, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You still have to get there. You know, you could have the nicest hotel room. You could be in first class. You could be in the lie down seats. It doesn't matter. You're still putting wear and tear on your body.
The feeling I got about seeing Elton was that he loves to play piano.
Yeah.
Like, in other words, obviously he loves to sing too, but right. that he could probably play the piano until the cows came home. And because they were doing so many jams and they were making songs longer
yes.
than they needed to.
The Levon and Rocketman jams.
Yeah,
I know. Uh-huh.
And they were so good. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was literally like they were in such a groove that, I don't know, there have been maybe six times ever in my life that I've seen a concert. Neil Young was one time where I was like just mesmerized. I was just literally going, these people are in such a moment right now, and to see it is incredible.
And it helps when you love the song. Because, you know, we've also seen some shows of artists that, you know, we like but don't love. And then they go into one of those jams and you're like,
when
oh
I
my
saw
God,
Neil
and...
Young, I didn't know any of the music because he was doing it. It was some crazy thing that he was doing at the time. And it was, I still loved it. The thing is that you get to see them in their kind of pared down, mm-hmm. I love music and this is why. Because I can play this however I want and that guy's going to get what I'm doing. And that's what was happening. It felt very unplanned, even though it was planned, because you can't
these,
let too many
They're like
of those.
These structured jams. Everybody
and it's
knows
very special
where,
to see somebody yes. that never does that do it.
Yes, I know. And again, it helps that the songs are so great that you really want to hear them, because, I mean, you know, I have to go see jam bands every now and then, and I'm just like,
oh that's
my God.
In the same way.
When is this going
when
to end?
They start noodling around.
Please
I'm
end.
Like, oh.
I'm like, I'll just spend the rest of the show on the concourse and go get another Diet Coke and go to the bathroom. Let's wait till I have to go to the bathroom.
I tried. Don't hate me for saying this, but I tried so hard with a Grateful Dead. I did
I know,
because I just wanted to
me too.
Love them. And there are like five songs that I love. But I when know. I saw them live, I was like, I could poke my eye out right now and
I know.
Not feel it.
And I was even warned by my cousin, who's a total Deadhead and has seen them 5 billion times. And when we went to see them, I know, probably like the late 90s when they did one of those, you know, one of their first tours out. Jerry wasn't with them, of course. And, you know, and I was like, well, I'm really looking forward to seeing Drum Space because I play the drums. And he's like, I don't know if you're going to like it. I'm like, oh, yeah, it'll be cool. I mean, it's Mickey Hart. It's whatever. Yeah, about 5 minutes in, I'm like, yep, you were right. Can we go now?
I feel like that about a few artists that friends were like, oh, but when you see them live, you'll feel differently. I'm like, wow, I really don't feel differently.
And I appreciate the musicianship. I do.
Yep.
I really, really do. I know how hard it is. And there are millions of fans who appreciate it as well. It's just that I like my 3.5 minute pop songs with the verse, chorus, verse, and a melody and something I can sing along with. And then, you know, seeing somebody live when they do go into these codas or interludes or whatever, that's cool.
Yeah,
I mean, that is cool.
Very, very
to hear a really familiar song like a Rocket Man or something stretched
out.
But
then out. What was so fun is then you'd hear little snippets of Saturday Night's All Right. You'd mm-hmm. hear other songs kind of in there and you're going, is he going to start playing that? And it was really cool.
Just a tease. Billy Joel does that a lot. He'll sometimes throw in, you know, like an old
yeah,
song, like
does.
A classical piece or something.
Or he'll do another artist's song.
Or he'll be playing one of his songs, but he'll take a snippet of something from, you know, Beethoven and just, you know,
yep.
and that's when you start to go, oh yeah, that's the same chord, or that's the same melody, or that's the same whatever that you just kind of manipulate a little bit for your own pop song, you know,
yes.
which is kind of cool.
I went with my nephew and his wife, and they are 20 years younger than I am. They had never seen him before, and they
Elton.
Were blown away.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they
it's
really
a great
felt
show.
Like, yep. And I think it's a great piece to go along with the movie.
Yes.
And the book.
The timing, of course, it's this like, year is everything converged pretty nicely for
yep.
for Elton. I mean, he is having a moment.
He sure is. But to be able to go out on stage and do that again, I don't remember a show as memorable except when he played a very small venue here once back in the 90s.
Yeah,
but,
which I missed.
Oh,
that
my gosh.
Nice
he's just, where is he going to be that if people are listening and don't live in Atlanta but live
Elton?
Somewhere else in the U.S.? Yeah, where else is he going to be playing in the U.S.?
Well, he's staying with the big cities right now. He's going to be in Philly really soon, the next couple of days, Cleveland, Pittsburgh, Boston, Uniondale, New York. And then he's going over to Australia for a good chunk, Australia and New Zealand.
So how much longer in the U.S.?
He's in the U.S. until the middle of November. Then he heads over to Australia end of this year, into next year, into March of next year, actually. Then he's coming back here in late March. Indianapolis picks up the U.S. leg. Leg five, actually.
Late March till when?
Late March until those final dates in London. So, he'll be in the U.S. until July. He'll be in the U.S. from March
so
until July.
Haven't...
But he's only doing like April, he's playing pretty regularly. But May and June, he's only doing maybe like 3 or 4 shows. Which means there are probably more to be announced.
So if you haven't seen Elton yet, definitely plan to go somewhere and see him if you are a big fan, because
It's so worth it. And really, you know, any of these artists, I was so happy that, you know, we got to see Bob Seger, because I do believe it's going to be the end for him.
I do too. And he didn't make a big deal about it. Right. It's kind of like, he's such an understated
exactly.
guy.
Exactly. That's such a Seger kind of thing.
It was a great show.
But the thing I always kind of keep in mind too is, you know, I'm going to see Elvis Costello tonight. Nobody's young anymore. And you just never know, you know, health and just mobility and the gumption to go out there and do it. I mean, all those things fade with age. And you never know when they might just say, I'm done. And Billy Joel has said he's not calling anything a farewell. He's just going to be done one night. He might just feel like, he said, when I walk off the stage and I know that may have been my last show because I'm just not feeling it anymore, he's like, then I'm done. And who knows when that will be. So go see these people while you can. However, be a little wary of the tag farewell, because you just never know.
We could call it faux farewell.
Faux farewell. I like that too.
There we go. Yes. So that's a wrap on the farewells. And we love to hear from you. Anytime that you want to give us feedback or give us a suggestion for what kind of musical topic you'd like to have us talk about.
Of course, check out the podcast. Every place that you can get podcasts. We're lots of places now, from what I understand. So.
And we'll post some kind of pictures. What did I just say that we have to take? Oh, you have to take pictures
my
of
Rick Springfield. Oh, the Capricorn Studios. That's right. I'm
going
down to Macon.
Yes, how
about
posting those on the Two Girls Talking Facebook page?
I will do that. I'm going down to Macon this week to check out the new Capricorn Studios, the fabled Capricorn Studios, big 70s rock haven that they are reopening early December. Mercer University has purchased it. They are reopening everything. It'll be a functioning studio again. They've built a music lab adjacent to it that music students can use 24/7, which is so cool. I want to be a music student at Mercer. But I will find out more once I go down there. And yes, I will take some pictures. And I'm going to check out Rose Hill Cemetery. I'm going to go by while I'm there and just see what they've done
to the
Greg Allman
plot. Want to see the pictures of the grave site now.
Yeah, we'll post some things for you.